Hi, I'm Josephine Ensign, author of Skid Road, On the Frontier of Health and Homelessness in an American City, and Way Home, Journeys Through Homelessness. For the past 40 years, I've worked as a nurse practitioner providing primary care to people experiencing poverty and homelessness. I have the lived experience of homelessness as a young adult. I live and work in Seattle, a city with our nation's third highest number of people experiencing homelessness. Only New York City and Los Angeles have higher numbers. The Skid Road podcast aims to amplify a diversity of voices about homelessness in the Seattle area. Beginning in 2015, when a state of emergency was declared for homelessness in our city and county, I've done a series of oral history interviews with local people living and working at the intersection of health and homelessness. Public health nurses, emergency department physicians, politicians, heads of nonprofit agencies, activists, and frontline staff. People who have not only endured homelessness, but who are now housed and are working on creative solutions to homelessness. I've learned a lot from my conversations with all of these people, and I want to share their insights with you. On a semi-weekly basis, I'll post a new podcast episode featuring these conversations, interspersed with some of my own reflections. Learn more about this project through my website at josephineensign.com. Please subscribe to this podcast and share it with others. Thanks for listening. We're ready? All right, let's go. So it is Thursday, June 18th, 2015, and I'm here with Eric. Is it Seitz or Seitz?
Yeah, Seitz.
Seitz, that's what I thought. Excuse me.
Very commonly mispronounced.
Yes, Eric Seitz. Eric Seitz. And this is Josephine Ensign, and we're doing the oral history on the Skid Road Project. And again, Eric, the purpose of this project is to increase an understanding of the complexity of charity healthcare in King County, Washington. And so I'm just going to open up with some questions and let you go for it, okay?
Yeah.
So I know you do a lot of work, and you've done a lot of work in the past and currently are doing a lot of work in terms of social justice, all sorts of different things. So what led you to the work that you do?
I never really planned on doing this while growing up. I originally had not planned on going into medical care or even working with any underserved populations whatsoever. I was really into a lot of like gardening and horticulture as a profession and as a passion for most of my life. And eventually, you know, going towards high school and getting into my late teens, I did find myself on the streets and was homeless myself for a while. For many years, actually, and basically that the conditions around that got a lot worse for me. It was a lot harder to survive. I got involved with the drug use, and that was very hard to be on the streets, but also then have to have a gigantic drug habit that you had to maintain on a daily basis. So that's kind of when things really spiraled downhill for me. And eventually I landed in Harborview Medical Center for a necrotizing soft tissue infection that was related to intramuscular heroin use. And it was basically because of that that I received that infection that came really close to killing me. And, you know, they said that they were going to have to definitely amputate my leg, which thankfully none of those things happened. So after that, I just had such a positive experience with the medical people in Harborview. Especially the nurses there and the PT and OT staff, that they really inspired me to kind of go into that work and to consider the role that I could actually play in people's lives that were going through similar situations that I was. So basically since the day I got out of the hospital, I really was turned on to the idea of nursing specifically and just trying to take it day by day and trying to do things that I could do and trying to look at things I could do immediately to help. So I would just continue volunteering, particularly in harm reduction programs like needle exchange, and did that. I think I started Christmas Day of 2009 and basically did that on a regular basis every week up to today. and it's about 6 years later. So that's something that I've always really want. Like, it's always been a huge part of my life, is doing something for underserved populations, but also doing something that you're not getting paid for, specifically not because it's – I just like the values behind that, like doing this kind of work and seeing it as an avocation and something that you actually want to do, and seeing the enrichment that is not just getting a paycheck. And I think that's added a lot more to my life than the idea of getting a job to just get rich, but, you know, have my basic needs met, but still be able to reach out to the community that I was very deeply embedded in. So that's kind of how I arrived to that place right now.
So still working, volunteering with Needle Exchange, and you kind of see that as something that you'll continue in the future?
Yeah, because when I did that for a couple years here in the University District at their Needle Exchange program. But then I wanted to get more public health education, so that's why I went across the mountains over the Cascades to Ellensburg to do a public health degree first before nursing school. So I did that, and I worked with the Needle Exchange over there, the County Needle Exchange in Kittitas County, and we helped start like a rural like mobile health or a mobile Needle Exchange program up in Upper Kittitas County, and did that for a while. Did a lot of like jail and inmate education for STDs and HIV and Hep C, all that kind of stuff. And since I've been back in Seattle for nursing school, I haven't worked in Needle Exchange, but I've been working with underserved populations, specifically homeless youth, at the 45th Street Clinic. And so that's the thing that I'm still doing today. I'd like to get back into harm reduction and Needle Exchange stuff specifically, but I think that I've kind of realized that my role, I want to expand it into other areas that not only include Needle Exchange, but also street access and just street outreach nursing to people like wherever they are. I mean, the street outreach nurses that are in Seattle, even though they're few, really inspire me. And that's kind of where I'm looking forward to now, because mm-hmm. I always thought that finishing nursing school would be the pinnacle of like all of my self-realizations have been achieved at that point, and then life will be perfect. And then you realize, like, once you get to the top of that mountain, there's like another vista that you can see, another gigantic mountain. And I've really kind of realized the idea of just enjoying the journey and making sure that that's the goal, not that there's some destination in which you'll find perfection or enlightenment.
Right. So tell me more about the other mountain that you see in the distance now. What does that look like to you?
For me, it's just the mountain is just to really appreciate taking the moment in day by day and not having to see the top of the mountain. But that's pretty much impossible for me because I'm really goal-oriented. But I do, you know, like I said, wanted to continue in street outreach nursing or wherever the world takes me. I've kind of found that if I just take one step at a time and leave opportunities open, that cool things will come into my world, and I'll just pursue those as they come. And that hasn't failed me so far. I don't know. It's a hard question. I'd really like to get more into advocacy work and more of the systems level work, which I think I've already been doing in small steps, but I'd really like to do more things working with like health and racial disparities too. So I'm trying to find opportunities to get more involved with that as well.
Okay. So I think you've kind of mentioned it a little bit in terms of like the Harborview experience when you landed in Harborview, mm-hmm. that it sounds as if that was kind of a turning point for you in terms of your life and your career. Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit more about that? Of like, was there a time or a specific interaction at all when you started seeing that there could be something different for you?
Yeah, because I had always really drifted through life during homelessness pretty apathetic or at least ambivalent towards my situation. I didn't really think that I didn't really care about living or dying, which is a weird place to be. Like I really did typify the hungry ghost kind of ideology. Like I didn't really care. I didn't think that even dying was going to happen to me. Like I just thought I was not invincible, but it just didn't really come to my mind. But when I realized, because I had woken up in Harborview after being in a coma for about a month, and I remember really deeply in my heart feeling the sense that it just got real and that I can't just run away from this. I can't just go, like, move to a different city. I can't avoid it through drugs anymore because I just can't do that. And it just basically, I had to sit in that suffering for a while and be okay with feelings again. And that was very odd for me because I knew how to take care of feelings, which was to avoid them through other behaviors. But after a while, then just seeing the nurses and the doctors and all the other people at Harborview work with me and talk to me like humans, I really started to realize that it is something that I could do. And it seemed really like an insurmountable task to actually get there. But it was the moment that I realized that I really wanted to just devote my life to that was one of the nurses. I don't remember what her name was or what she even looks like at this point. But she said something really simple, probably kind of jokingly, that I would be a good candidate for nursing school and that I should go do that and then we'll give you a job afterwards. and I really took that literally. And I think that has inspired me, not that I expect Harborview to just go and hire me just for arbitrary reasons like that. But I think that has been something that has hugely motivated me to realize that I have self-importance and that I have self-love. And that's why self-care is so huge for me, because if I lose sight of that, I don't really – it's kind of like a part of my identity would slip away, I feel.
So. Okay. So you felt like she said it a little bit offhandedly, but you took it seriously. So
yeah.
She wasn't – so it came across as if she really felt like you could actually do that. Is that
– Yeah, that's really cool. That's a really good way to put it, because and that's still carried with me today where – if I'm talking to somebody, I really want to be completely present and engaged with them and give them the honor that the moment deserves, you know, and to notice those little simple things, and that something small you can say can really have a huge, like, deep spiritual or emotional impact on somebody. So that's kind of definitely come with me, and that's why I've also realized the importance of community and psychiatric care and nursing.
Right. And you just graduated from University of Washington School of Nursing. So congratulations.
Yeah,
I saw you walk across that stage last Friday, so congratulations on that.
Yeah.
So go back a little bit, the hungry ghost. Tell me what that felt like to you.
Mm-hmm.
What was the hungry ghost?
It's interesting because I think I mentioned before it was very hard to really – identify any specific moments within that time period, but like I do have very specific sensory, like tactile sensations that I actually remember and what that felt like emotionally or physically. I think that at first when I was younger and starting out on that, it was more of like a rebellious kind of wanting freedom and independence and autonomy kind of thing. And I did have that for quite a while, but then you know, as things got ramped up a little bit more, it ended up just being really lonely because I'm a solitary person, and I am today and I was back then. And it's hard when you don't have any kind of human contact or interaction for years at a time. It just like really wears on your soul. No matter who you are. And I think I remember that loneliness feeling and that deep void that I felt in my body that I had to kind of satiate. I think that was the addiction, but among other things. And then also the one thing that I remember the most is when you would be coming off of like an opiate or something and you're very physically ill, you're emotionally ill, and really kind of know exactly what you can do to make that better, but you just don't have the resources to do that because of whether or not you burned all your bridges or you just don't have the energy. And there's many times where I would wake up like on a church stoop or something and kind of wake up in the morning when the birds are chirping and it's just the dawn is starting to come up and it's raining a little bit, but it's freezing and you're in a cold jail blanket that's soaking wet on the concrete and your bones are hurting and really depressed. And it just like you just don't really even care about getting up. You're okay with just sitting there in that moment because you can't do anything else. And just that feeling of losing all hope but just kind of rolling with it is a very hard place to be. And it's hard to actually see a way out of it at that point.
So when you were out there, when you were on that like cold stoop and trying to figure out Right. And as you said, you weren't really caring about life or death. Were there any times that people reached out to you? Like you said, that the street outreach part of it is important to you now, you know, in terms of the giving side of it. Did you have any interactions like that when you were living on the streets?
Yeah, I mean, my family was trying to stick with me for as long as they could because they are amazing people. It was more of like my own myself that wanted to run away. So they were there, but eventually I kind of burned those bridges that they had to take care of their mental health too, so they had to disconnect. So that wasn't really an option anymore. And I didn't really – I had no interaction with really any medical or healthcare services. I didn't ever see outreach people. Probably because I was intentionally trying to hide for the most part. But there were some places like drop-in centers that I would go to occasionally, like the old PSKS when it was in on Capitol Hill, over there kind of by Olive. And I would go in there and maybe get a sandwich, but then people – like a social worker would want to talk to me, and I would just flip them off and leave. but there are other cool people that were – really selfless in their actions. And I think one of these guys still does that just in a different capacity. But he would just, on Sunday evenings, he would just drive his van on Broadway when it was a lot less busy and just park it on the side right where the all the light rail stuff is going in right now. And he would just sit there and hand out bagged lunches and sandwiches, and people would just sit on the sidewalk there and get fed. And that was something that was really huge to me, and I got the opportunity to like thank him for that a couple years ago because he was still doing it.
Nice. So he was just doing it on his own.
Yeah. And it just it wasn't like anything that was religiously affiliated. It was just this guy who wanted to do this. And that meant a lot to me. Like even at my mind state that I was in back then, it was like really huge and reliable. And that's kind of another thing that I found that's hugely important with especially youth. Or anybody really living on the streets is the continuity and just being reliable and being somebody that they can count on as far as relationship building. That's more important than anything else. It's just like when you're going to do something, like follow your word and say you're going to do it. Don't just flake off.
Right.
So that's huge.
And so did you find that when you were at Harborview as well? Did that seem to like to carry through as something that was important to you with a staff?
Yeah, and that was important to me because I saw it in both ways. I mean, there's obviously really great nurses. There's some that might not be so great in that area. Mm-hmm. They might be great clinical people, but they're not, like, so good with communication skills or empathy at all. And there was things that would happen that I would see that irked me as well. Like, because the situation I was in Harborview was, like, I was very dependent on everybody. You know, I was in the ICU for quite a while and then in the step-down unit while I was recovering and – like, couldn't walk. Like, I was dependent on people for my toileting needs and food and anything else that I would need. And there'd be times where, you know, people wouldn't answer the call light for, like, an hour at sometimes, and where it was, like, a bathroom emergency or something like that. And then, like, you just deal with it, and then it gets really messy after that. So, and it's kind of a humbling place to be. And just the pain involved with that when, like, the physical pain I was going through is extreme, but like something as far as somebody just sitting down on the bed and like actually getting to my level and actually looking me in the eye or putting their name on the whiteboard to remind me what their name was and other little fun stuff like that was the most important stuff, than some of the more complicated medical stuff. Because sometimes people wouldn't do that and I wouldn't know who my nurse was for a day at a time. And not wanting to bother people myself, it was, you know, you get put in another situation that you feel very vulnerable.
So those seemingly little things, like just knowing who the person is and they put their names on were really important.
I've noticed that while also working with underserved and homeless individuals in a clinical capacity now that, like, I'll always offer that empathetic listening and, you know, kind of more of the motivational interviewing stuff. But, like, because, I mean, I liked that, but that doesn't necessarily mean other people are going to appreciate that as much either. But I'll put it out there. If they just are hostile towards me, I'll let that go and not take it personally. But that's all you have to do, you know. It's just kind of go through things. For me, not taking it personally and just giving the effort and just being there, like always being there.
Right. So, and that kind of relates to something that you mentioned earlier that I want to go back to as well, self-care. Because you're saying, like, you're talking about the mountains. You're over the mountain. You're looking ahead. There's another mountain that you didn't know was there, but you're kind of, like, appreciating the valley.
Yeah, because the valleys are beautiful, too.
Yeah.
You know?
So, but tell me some more, like, what does self-care look like to you?
For me, the past few years, it's kind of ebbed and flowed. Like, there have been times, especially during nursing school, where I didn't do that as much as I should have. And getting into, old behaviors that are just slippery slopes and stuff like that. For me, originally, the first few years of recovery, I did a lot of, 12-step meetings and that kind of stuff. I did a lot of hanging out with other people that were in that same mindset. And I still do that here and there, but I've also kind of shifted to more of a, meditation-based recovery practice, where there's still group meetings, but it's more of where you have a group sangha meditation meeting where you get together and you have discussion afterwards, but it's not 12-step based, because I appreciate both of those modalities, but I just feel a lot more peace of mind through the reflective properties of meditation now. So I do a lot of that and helped start a couple groups around Seattle that are involved with that, which is – it's a specific program that's called Dharmapunks Refuge Recovery Program, and that's just a non-12-step Buddhist meditation and recovery-based program. And then also just doing solitary meditation and then a lot of hiking and backpacking and biking and, using my body to be in the moment rather than using something outside of myself, chemically.
Right.
Because that's kind of always really what I really wanted was to enjoy the moment and to appreciate the people around me. And drugs are a really good way to do that for a temporary amount of time. But then there's the addiction side effect. And that might work for a lot of people. But for me, my personality doesn't jive well with doing that on a regular basis. So
right.
It makes me do weird things.
Well, and it also sounds like spending more time in nature goes back to one of your first loves of gardening and horticulture.
It is. I mean, my first memory is of me and my grandmother when I was probably 2 or 3, just smelling roses and putting my hands in the soil and, putting seeds in holes and then, watching them grow and that, the very visceral pleasures that I got from that. And I have a tattoo of buttercups because I remember that experience with my grandma and seeing the buttercups in her garden. It was really impactful for me, and I think I do feel that. I just think I'm intrinsically really interested in that side of the world, and whether or not my ancestors were involved in that in some capacity, probably. But that's definitely part of my self-care is that connection that I feel, and I wish I felt that. I wish more people were able to feel that without, continue to colonize the world, you know.
Right. So. And you were telling me earlier that grandmother that got you into this, that was helping you plant seeds and smell, or I guess you can't smell buttercups, but smell roses, is still alive and was at your graduation party, too.
Yeah, she was. And I stayed with her for a while when I was still in active addiction. And it was a really heartbreaking moment for me when I was even use her, because I used people a lot to get what I needed to do without having the empathy of what it might feel like for them. And I even used her in that way. And that was something that I broke my heart. But the fact that she still had the compassion to forgive all the stuff that I did while I'm trying to repay whatever, however I can, in what capacity, all she asks of me is just to be a good human, you know. Of course.
Right.
But yeah, she's always been there. She's still alive and kicking for a while. So I'm really appreciative of that.
So it sounds like she's been one of your kind of guiding mentors in life.
Well, just that I try to emulate her personality because she's one of those grandmothers who you've never heard her raise her voice ever. And it's just super relaxed and mellow and it's kind of like that. She's there, for you, and she'll always will be, you know.
Nice. Well, we talked a little bit about some of the challenges that you've had in your work, because you've really overcome a lot of those challenges. But what would you say has been one of your biggest joys in your work so far? And work, you know, the just like your overall work, however you define that.
Yeah, just seeing it's also the kind of the small things that I see, because there's obviously times where things can get frustrating and I'm dealing with hostile and adverse personalities that don't want anything to do with you. And then sometimes you can't help but take it personally and say, what am I doing? But there's also the same people that will come back the next day, like as far as like maybe a client I was working with in the clinical last quarter at the Morrison downtown, which is all formerly homeless people with more serious psychiatric illnesses or conditions. And, you know, having one guy who I was trying to do foot care on, he's like, I don't know you. Like, I don't – why would I let you be in my bubble and file my feet down and – like, I, you know, you're nothing, like, nothing to me, basically. I don't want you to do this. And then I would take it personally. But then the next day he would come in his wheelchair and say, I'm sorry I was so mean to you. I really know that you're actually here to help me. And that's kind of the times you really feel like it's just a trip to realize that you don't really know anything about anybody else other than maybe yourself, maybe. But just to give people the chance and the opportunity to grow within their own emotions, I think right. That's the best part.
And almost like those seeds, right? You're
planting
those little seeds, trying to stay present and be there for them.
Totally. Yeah. And that's the same thing with needle exchange. Like, obviously, I'm personally not into using IV drugs anymore, but I get a benefit out of it naturally doing that for my own recovery. But then also it does like plant the seeds where I'll help you be alive long enough to make the choice if you want to one day to stop. But I'm not going to make you do that. But like it actually does happen sometimes. And I got people that would come back, you know, a year or two later and say that they've been clean for 6 months or something like that, and that they're more involved with that. And that doesn't happen with everybody, but it does happen. You know, even a close friend at the exchange that I was working with, who is, you know, severely addicted to heroin, and then she just started asking me about my stuff. And then eventually here she has, you know, she's been clean for 2 years or whatever and is, you know, in culinary school and loving life in Portland and does that.
Nice. So you get to see what some of those kinds of things do.
And it's kind of cliche to say it's the people, but it is really how I feel.
Right.
That's the good stuff.
That's the good stuff.
And just creating community. I mean, that's my goal, is to actually create a community which people identify with other people as being also a part of themselves intrinsically, and that, like, if you're going to hurt somebody or if you're going to do something good for somebody, that that's doing the same thing to yourself, you know, kind of like a karmic kind of thing.
The different connections,
And I know. So why would you want to hurt your – like, why are you going to, like, hurt yourself or steal from this person? You're basically just stealing from yourself. I don't know if that's a reality or not, but I like the idea of that.
Right, the interconnection.
Yeah.
And that I know you're also involved in some environmental causes as well.
Yeah.
It sounds like that is kind of possibly related to just how we're getting along in the world as well.
Yeah, because I would really like to think that – I mean, I'm pretty radical in that way, I guess you could say, but I really – I would really appreciate to go back to what life was like before colonization of the U.S., and I could really like it to be that way. I know it's probably impossible at this point, but I really like to be able to support causes in which the people that are most affected by it are not the ones that are able to actually fight for it. So, like, as a person of privilege, like, I have to be the one that puts my neck out there to do something about it. Otherwise, I'm just contributing to the problem. Like, I really feel that way. And it just really kind of irks me when I see groups of people or organizations that are blatantly trying to do the opposite of that for the purpose of monetary gain and destruction of the things that are what I hold most dearly in my heart. So it's kind of a very life or death kind of fight for me that I feel, trying to still be considerate of other people's lives and situations, but... I would really like to be able to drink clean water and breathe clean air. I mean, that's my goal, because I just remember also that those sensations that I was talking about before of, like, sleeping on the concrete with, people walking over you and not having a sense of community. And I see the world going into that direction more and more every day, and more people being put on the streets in that situation, with a few people gaining a little bit of resources. It's very connected to my personal values to be able to make sure that that's not going to continue happening. But it gets overwhelming sometimes when you see, like, all this work gets put into it, but nothing really comes of it. But maybe it will eventually.
So how do you keep up hope with that part of it? Like, what do you do to keep going on
just
that?
Just keep doing more. I mean, because, like, with the environmental stuff, I mostly do it within a medical capacity, too. I mostly do street medic stuff within theirs, and then mostly deal with, like, injuries dealing with police brutality and police-related injuries, or sheet exhaustion for being out in the sun for 12 hours during the day for 5 days in a row. And I see that there's, like, a very easy – like, a lot of people burn out on that very quickly because they don't try to do things to prevent that from happening. Like, they just keep going and keep going but don't do the self-care. But I have to make sure that I know my limit. Like, I have to say that I'm not going to do this today. I have to, like, hide out for a while and go to bed maybe. But it's necessary, but then you also feel the guilt because then you're also, like, contributing to the system. Like, it's impossible to live in this culture and this society without using the resources that are being used, you know, like, as far as, like, example, oil products and stuff like that, and all the controversy coming around today during this time. Like, I get a lot of people that would say, you know, you used oil to drive your car down here, or your kayak's made out of oil byproducts. But then I just had to tell them, like, what would you do?
Right.
Like, if this fight was, like, something that was important to you, like, how tell me how you could actually get past it. And that's, like, the messed up thing is that you can't.
Right.
Like, it's completely embedded in everything we do, even in this room, you know?
So in that, you're talking about the oil rig.
Yeah.
That was, yeah,
and that's just like a small microcosm of what's actually happening. It's more symbolic, you know, because Arctic's already being drilled in right now by other countries, and that's going on. But and like other things that are like that are going all over around the world. So it's like a small little thing, but I think that as far as for me, it's more about the small inspiration and that seed to plant that in other people to show that you can actually do something and organize around a cause, whether it's environmental issues or homelessness issues or food access or food deserts and stuff like that. It's I think that you can actually make contributions, at least as far as inspiring other people.
Right. And that one, of course, the oil rig came to us.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. So it was kind of in our backyard, even though it was in the Puget Sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what kinds of hopes for the future do you have for healthcare, especially in King County in the Seattle area, especially for underserved homeless populations? Like, what kinds of things do you see that give you hope?
I like a lot of the stuff that the community healthcare organizations doing, like Neighbor Care or, you know, even Harborview. I would really like to see us move away from a hospital-based system to a more community-based system, and having more of funding being put in to those areas rather than being in the single digits for public health funding as far as overall health spending. I don't know. I'm really a prevention nut and want to be able to go more towards that, but then that's kind of dealing with not just healthcare, it's dealing with all the social disparities as well. And it's just hard to get people on board because you don't really see, you know, like with the public health thing, like the mantra where you don't, like if they're doing their job, you don't see, nothing happens. But I think we just need to swallow our pride, and people need to not expect to get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for doing something that's actually not really contributing to overall health. Access for people and just health status in general, even for the people that are receiving that care. I'd like to see it go more in the opposite way of that, but it's also hard to advocate for that when there's so many resources being put into the acute care system. And then also, like, working with other social organizations like the Racial Disparity Project through the Public Defender Association. Like, those would be things that would directly contribute to health, you know, access to people. So more of those things that don't inherently seem at their root health-based, like trying to realize that those actually do contribute and having more attention put to those kinds of things.
Right. And so, and I know you recently, like one of your last clinical rotations, you were working with the hot nurses. So what was that like?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Because I met them through the interdisciplinary class that I did the year before, the underserved populations class, and then just talked to her that came. And she now doesn't work for NeighborCare. She lives in Luxembourg, I think, just having fun with life. Mm. But that connected me to the other hot nurses. And now I'm really good friends with both of them. And we've spent a lot of time together this last quarter. So spending multiple days a week with them, it was really good. It just also get me more hyped about housing access too, just because it is within supportive housing units. And it's a total harm reduction approach. Like, we have these services available for you if you want them, but you're not required to. And that you just see people that actually do access them. Obviously, the majority of people don't. And there's a lot of issues, both within the housing units, but also the surrounding areas. It's very hard to do stuff like stay clean if you have an addiction, if you're running around Pioneer Square all day and night. But like, it's one small thing that you can do to really give people the chance to succeed. And not all people want housing, but it's something that's good to provide. And it was good because I think a lot of other students in my class didn't really think that community health could look like that, and that you're actually doing a lot of both like social work stuff and clinical, like acute care stuff even, and like a ton of wound care and a lot of foot care and a lot of preventative stuff, a lot of psych nursing. It kind of had mixes of everything together, and that was really cool to me because I really I spread myself out like in a lot of areas, so I kind of know a little bit about everything. Ideally, just to be the most helpful to somebody. But that also kind of invigorated me to think about doing like certifications in the future, maybe wound care nursing or dermatology or something like that. So it was hugely important because I learned all those skills, but also just the network of people that I am now introduced to was almost even more important because now I know a lot of people through NeighborCare and DESC and Plymouth Housing Group and REACH Team and Public Health Department of Seattle and other organizations that go through those places, and just seeing how we can create kind of those spokes councils within like that kind of sub-community and help each other out, get that job done and those values accomplished.
So what can you give me like an example of something that just really impressed you with what the hot nurses were doing, something that hadn't occurred to you before? I mean, besides like what you're saying is just like the range of things that they're actually involved with. But anything else that you can?
Yeah, because it was basically a lot of is completely different every day. Like obviously we do wound care on a daily basis and foot care and stuff like that, but also the care coordination that went really impressed me, where a person could actually come into the nurse's station and they could sit down for them for an hour at a time if they needed to, and the nurse could give them that energy, that attention, and they would actually physically call to make them appointments, or if they needed help getting other stuff, like other services, they would help them do that. And even physically go to appointments, with them. Like there was this guy that I worked really closely with, and I would go to his orthopedic appointments at Harborview a couple times and just be there for him, but also kind of navigate him through the health system because he was fairly illiterate. And my philosophy is I try to allow people to empower themselves to do what they can do and like encourage them to do that, even if it's a little tough. But then if I recognize that they're having a hard time or are getting aggravated about it, that I can be there to help them through it. But then they'll start doing it themselves next week.
So what was that like, being back at Harborview, being kind of a patient navigator? What did you notice about the Harborview system?
It's definitely a big system. Like, even like Harborview is even – I don't really like the big system stuff too much, but I do appreciate all that's being done there. Because I didn't really have a lot of interaction with Harborview when I was a patient, other than the hospital room that I was in. I had no clue where I was going, you know, my first – because I did my psych clinicals there as well, and it was very overwhelming for me, and I didn't really know where I was going, and I had to relearn it kind of in a way.
You mean just like the whole building?
The whole building. And then this, I don't really, I mean, it's pretty easy just calling a clinic and making an appointment. That's kind of just like any other primary care clinic. It's somewhat similar. But there's still bureaucracies that you have to navigate. But once you get to know some of the key people that you work with on a regular basis, then they get to know you. And I think that's good. And a lot of them know the patients and the residents that we'd work with. So.
And for the most part, did you find that it was fairly compassionate care?
Yeah. For the most part. I just find it really interesting, especially in teaching hospitals, how things work and how much the residents are running around and learning too. And, you know, I did a lot of hospital rotations, but I think Harborview was one of the better ones.
In what way? Like, how would you
just like them? The mission behind it and like the population that they're trying to serve is pretty righteous. Because I, you know, even from my circumstance, like I initially didn't go to Harborview. My friend originally brought me to Swedish's emergency room, and I think they did what they could and did a couple of debridement surgeries, but then they said that they can't do this anymore and then sent me to Harborview after that. And that's when they kind of took everything on. That's when all the charity care stuff did happen, which, you know, I'm obviously eternally grateful for. And that's kind of why I do what I do now, is to not necessarily repay society, but to self-actualize within myself, but also be like a resource for the community to prevent that from happening to somebody. Because I can't empathize with what the suffering's like, and I don't want anyone else to feel that way.
Right.
So if I can advocate either clinically or systemically, I really want to do that for stuff like charity care.
So, and that leads me to, what are your next steps? Like, what are you hoping to do in terms of, I mean, I know, like you said, you're going to continue to do a lot of volunteer work, but what are you going to do for paid work, do you think? What are you hoping?
I've thought about a lot of different things. I've thought about, like, even just, like, not living in the U.S. I've thought about maybe doing more international global health stuff too. Probably not immediately, but I kind of really want to go, like, move to South America again for a year or two and practice Spanish and stuff like that again, because I really want to – that's one of my other mountains, is to perfect that language, because it's been a long road for me and I still don't feel good with it. But I'm trying to hold out for a community health job if I can. I've applied to hospital jobs. I haven't gotten any calls for interviews or anything like that yet. But I'm hoping for this one in July. It's completely different, but it's an OR residency job, because I'm also really interested in that. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not as much community-based whatsoever, I really like that. But I'd really like to just work in an actual, like, street-level community position. So that's why I'm looking at places like DESC or NeighborCare. And the HOT team said that they would consider hiring me for that position, but that is one of those jobs where you actually kind of do need a year of experience, because it's really, really autonomous. And, if I don't know what I'm doing in the first place, I don't want to act like I know what I'm doing. And I think I could maybe figure it out, but I think that the residents deserve a little bit more than that. And I think that the things I add socially, or at least, and more personally and emotionally, are good things. But I do want to learn some more assessment skills and more wound care stuff.
And foot care.
Foot care. I think I got that one down.
Yeah, I got that one.
That's so good. That's what the goals. I'm also trying to one of my goals is to relax too for a while, because, like, the stress is just not worth it to me.
And I imagine nursing school has been fairly stressful at times.
A little bit, but I actually am going to miss it, though. I don't really actually want to leave, because I feel really grateful that I was able to do that in the first place. and all the information I was learning, like all the sciences, were really completely amazing. And I had a great time. So when I tell that to other students, they kind of laugh at me. But I actually really did enjoy it because it gave me more purpose to, like, get up in the morning. And I'm really nerdy in the way that I like to study a med-surg book or some other textbook on a Friday night rather than go out and
Well, you still get to study that as you come up on the NCLEX, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, very deeply.
Right. And you've also been involved with the U District Street Medicine Project.
Yeah, and I've kind of been phasing out of that lately, especially since I'm graduating, but I could still help out in some capacity, but I'm just trying to focus on other things right now. But I was definitely there during the beginnings of, like, the discussions about it a couple of years ago, and I've been more of an advisor role there. And I think they're still continuing to make strides to make sure that's a reality. I'm not connected too much right now, but I'm hoping to continue doing that.
Right. Nice. Mm-hmm. So is there anything that you wish I had asked you that you wanted to talk about a little bit this interview? Anything?
I don't know. I feel pretty good about it. There's nothing that's burning my ears or anything like that I can think of.
Okay. All right. Well, I have one other question that came up, if you don't mind me going with that one. It relates to the self-care. Because you talk about, like, a lot of issues, environmental issues, social justice issues, and that I can imagine there's a lot of anger, which happens with everybody who's, you know, wanting to right wrongs. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the anger?
Yeah, because I don't feel a lot of anger personally. Like, I don't really feel that the emotion of anger and hatred is really even a part of my makeup. I don't think that really – that can't really access my being very well. I just don't really think it's worth it. But I do see that in other people, and I do – I don't have pity, but I just have concern for people that get into those places because it can get – the message can turn really sideways at that point if we have a lot of people like screaming at, you know, or cops or other people that, like, are contributing to the issues or not. I think that, like, for my own self-care is to really just continue being that presence there and to be a calm, like, spread calm within that area. And, like, if, like, something happens and people are getting beat up by batons or pepper sprayed, like, to that, I'll just be there to talk to them and to not raise my voice and to really allow them to know that somebody's there for them and regardless of what capacity. That really helps me personally as well to do that for people. And knowing that I'm not their savior, but we're just equals here trying to get through the situation. Luckily, it hasn't happened a lot the past couple of years where we've had to really spread calm that acutely. But it, when it does happen, I want to be there for them because it will eventually. Because I just see, especially in the protests, I don't think people are unjustified in feeling that anger and rage. but sometimes it can get the best of them where they break down emotionally, and I can see that when they're sitting in the corner after the action or whatever, and then they're really depressed looking, and that's just another opportunity to go over there and ask them how their heart is, you know?
Nice. So spreading calm is part of your bag of first aid.
Yeah. It's probably the biggest one, that and water.
That is nice. So you think you got that from your grandma, or where did you learn that?
Yeah, I mean, my grandma, my other family. I don't know. I think that just, like, the style of the family that I grew up in wasn't necessarily the most emotionally connected. But it was, and, like, I think that this whole situation with my hospitalization really helped that. He brought my extended family together and to realize the value of close family connections and extended family connections. But also it was a situation where we didn't yell at each other, mostly not out of, like, duty that we didn't, like, for some idealistic reason, but just because it's, like, why? Because there was that interconnected feeling that we are still a part of each other's lives. And I definitely think that that's been something that's important for all of us, especially getting through hard situations. it doesn't really help to scream at each other.
Right. Nice. So I wanted to thank you for taking time out of studying for the NCLEX.
Yeah. I'm not going to start until Monday, I think. I'm going to have a weekend. But
right. And I really look forward to following what good you do in the world.
Yeah.
As you continue.
We'll stay connected.
All right. So thank you.
Thank you.